associations, people who are not using and who have found a new way of life. So as long as I follow that way, I have nothing to fear.
Thanks, Erica.
All right. So now comes the time where I do the introduction. The guy that we chose to speak as our main speaker, I met about 20 minutes before this whole thing went down. And, you know, I knew that I wanted to hear his message when I looked at his shirt, and I seemed grateful because, you know, gratitude is something that, you know, I like to try to keep in the forefront of my mind. He is from the More Will Be Revealed Friday 9 p.m. Zoom meeting out of Las Vegas. I give you Ed F.
I'm an addict in recovery, and my name is Ed. And I'm clean through God's grace and this program called Narcotics Anonymous. It's an honor and a privilege, right, to be invited anywhere. I was that crackhead that at the end of my addiction was banned from the neighborhood crack house, even though it was an abandoned dominion. They told me that I wasn't welcome because I didn't like to share my crack. So, I got a couple of chuckles. So that means there's some of you out there that used like I used. I'm not going to talk about my war story. I'm going to talk about what happened and what is currently happening to keep me in Narcotics Anonymous. We just did a wonderful clean time countdown, right? Class of 95, we showed out. Class of 95, right? We showed out. And not that class of 95 was any better than anyone else, but something happened in 95. The level of desperation that took place in my life caused many others in that time to say, I can't do this anymore. I can't live this way anymore, right? And then the courage that we just saw with the person with one day clean, right? Let's give her another round of applause. I don't know if you noticed, right? But I never went anywhere without my paraphernalia. I mean, I used to break the stem and then go look for it just to push it through one more time. So I never went anywhere without my paraphernalia. So in a Narcotics Anonymous meeting, right, in a Narcotics Anonymous event, I don't go anywhere without my paraphernalia. Right? The answers are in the steps. Listen, you guys can get pissed at Drew. He's the one who invited me. There are some things that are going to come out of my mouth that are going to step on some toes. Some of you are going to feel uncomfortable. Some of you may laugh, which you already did. Some of you may cry. The reality of it is that what I'm going to share about is my experience. It's what I've lived for the last 28 years, 1 month, and 20 days. The last 2 days, I've been in God's country. I was supposed to be in God's country. I was invited to another convention where all my friends are. But Drew beat that programming chair to the punch. And I'm not gonna lie, I thought about calling Drew. But it was a fleeting thought. Because I like first. I don't know if you, I like my first airplane ride. I like my first car ride. I like my first, right, alcohol drink. I like the first time I smoked pot. I liked first. I liked the first time I got laid. I liked it. I don't know if you did. I liked it. There was something about the first in the things that I liked that caused me to do them again. I liked my first Narcotics Anonymous meeting. I didn't want to come to, like, I there wasn't a rah-rah. Can't wait. There was none of that. Because at the end of my role, right, I was in, check this out. There's something about desperation. And many people share about it. There's something about desperation that's pretty intense. But our literature says that we got here in utter desperation. There was another level of desperation. And some of us, especially the ones that have been here decades clean, are still in utter desperation, still living, right, and suffering in silence. I'm going to talk about that tonight. And I don't mean to step on anybody's toes. I'm just talking about me. Right? I came to Narcotics Anonymous to stop smoking crack. I didn't come here to stop smoking pot or stop drinking alcohol. That was your stuff, not mine. But there was a process that got me to believe that stopping had something to do with my life getting better. Right? And when they read, right, from the fifth tradition, the line, right, that an addict, any addict, fat addict, skinny addict, black addict, white addict, right, diversity is our strength, right, that any addict can stop using drugs, lose the desire to use, and find a new way of life. Right? Now, I've been working on this new way of life now for almost 3 decades. But that second part, the second part doesn't say lose the desire to use drugs. It says lose the desire to use. So I came in wanting to not smoke crack, and I find myself, right, with clean dates in multiple areas of my life. Like 7/7/95, I stopped using drugs. 8/12/96, I stopped using nicotine. 1/1/99, I stopped using caffeine. Right? No chocolate, no soda, no coffee, no caffeine. Like if I drank a Red Bull, some of the shit you guys would drink, I'd be out of my mind. Yeah. October 1st, I'll be celebrating 16 years with no porn and no sex with self. I'm talking about having the ability to stop and stay stopped. Because the literature says very clearly, right, that abstinence doesn't equal recovery. There's an action, there's something I need to do. Right, and now listen, I'm not talking outside of the boundaries of what Narcotics Anonymous has taught me. Narcotics Anonymous is not a drug program. We are a recovery program. A program that helps us recover from the disease of addiction, not from drugs. I'm grateful for crack, because without crack I would have never met you. Bunch of knuckleheads. So I opened this book. Again, your fault. I go to a meeting, raise my hand, I'm new. Somebody runs over, gives me, back then all of these books didn't exist, they run over with some colorful pamphlets and this little white book. And they tell me to go home and read it. And I've been reading the literature ever since. And the new literature is more exciting. The Living Clean. It saved my life with 12 and a half years into the process. Changed my life. But I'm going to read something so you can understand where I'm coming from. It comes out of recovery and relapse. So I don't know if you read your literature, right? But see, I read my literature. If your book ain't falling apart, that means you ain't reading your literature. Just saying. But it says obsessive behavior is a common denominator for addictive people. It says we have times when we try to fill ourselves up until we are satisfied, only to discover that there's no way to satisfy us. Not some way. No way. It says part of our addictive pattern is that we could never get enough. I'm struggling with Oreo cookies. Just saying. Struggling. I stopped a lot of things. But sugar is killing me. Never get enough. And here's the scary part. It's not that I eat Oreo cookies. It's not that I eat Oreo cookies in front of you. It's that I wait for my wife to go to sleep. And then, in secret, and when she asks, I don't know what you're talking about. 28 years in. Here's where you gotta write these next six words. I want you to hone in on. The first three, it says, sometimes we forget. Do you remember, like, it wasn't that bad? You just swore you'll never do it again. But you woke up the next day, it wasn't that bad. But so sometimes, not all the time, but sometimes we forget. And then the next three words is the killer. It says, and we think. Now, in the 10th step, it says that thinking is a privilege. But thinking is a privilege. Thank God for sponsorship. Right? Because I don't know about you, I get a lot of bright ideas. I'm a high intellect. I try to figure shit out all the time. It's horrible to try and figure stuff out. But it says here, sometimes we forget and we think that if we just get enough food or enough sex or enough money will be satisfied and everything will be all right. It says self-will still leads us to make decisions based on manipulation, ego, lust, or false pride. So I'm clean. I'm clean. 12 and a half years at the time that I became sexually sober. I'm not talking about so. I'm not mixing the message. Just listen to the right. I get sexually sober. Now I don't get sexually sober because I want to. I get sexually sober because my heart is broken. Right? Because the woman that I love, I found out, was having an affair. For 3 years. And it wasn't with me. But what happened was that I had been having multiple affairs for years and never got caught. So that was cool. Until it happens to you. And you'll get your turn. You'll get your turn. And so when I started this process of sexual sobriety, I started coming to NA. I was excited. I needed outside help, right? Because my sponsor, I don't know, my sponsor's got like 36 years clean and he's been with one woman. I don't get that. I don't, like, and he's like, I don't have that issue. I really can't help you with that. So I needed to seek help because I wanted to kill myself with 12 and a half years. I didn't want to smoke crack. I wanted to kill myself. And so I went on this journey. I sought outside help. Now, listen, I came to Narcotics Anonymous. This woman that I'm sharing about, right, is currently my wife. But with 12 and a half years clean, she had to go. That was 11 years ago. She had to go. Well, actually, that was 16 years ago, right? She had to go. And in that process, I met her. And I don't know if you've ever done this, but if you have, please don't talk about it to anyone. So I met my wife in detox. I don't know if you've ever done that. But it's what's interesting is that my wife had 0 days clean. I was the counselor. That's the part where you shouldn't do it. It's inappropriate. Yeah, it's inappropriate. And I was on the roller coaster ride of my life. And 10 years into the relationship, we have a daughter. She's 7 years old. I find out she's having an affair. I end the relationship. I got this thing inside of me. I don't know how many of you are Latino in the room, but as a Puerto Rican, I got this thing. I was born with it. It wasn't kind of, you know, it's called machismo. It's very hard to shake, you know. But one of the things that happened to me in that experience, right, is I started to lose my mind. And you know what I found out? That I had something inside of me called stalker. You ever suffer from that? I was doing drive-bys, you know, at 2 a.m, and I was touching her muffler. I was out of my mind, right? So it sounds like some people can identify, right? So So the word lust is in our literature. I'm a word man. I like to study words. I like to try and understand what words are, right? And so I'm going to give you the definition of what lust is, right? So lust is an attitude demanding that a natural instinct serve an unnatural desire, right? It says when we try to use anything to reduce isolation, loneliness, insecurity, fear, tension, to cover our emotions, to make us feel alive, to help us escape or satisfy our God hunger, we create an unnatural appetite that misuses and abuses the natural instinct. Right? That's what lust is. Most people think it has to do with sex. It has to do with anything that's going to remove the relationship that I've been building with God since step three. Right? Because if I say I worked the steps and I'm working a program of recovery, right, step three, I'm eventually going to get to where I'm turning my will and my life over to the care of God, which means I'm turning my thinking, right, my life, my heart over to something that is untangible or intangible, right, and I have to trust that that decision is going to be the best decision I ever made in my life. And with 30, 60, 90 days cleaning, when we work a third step, we have no idea what the hell we're turning our will and our lives over to. So that's why it's suggested to stay. That's why our literature is so important. That's why when our subcommittees and our people continue to develop literature so that we can get better, so the newcomer can come in and the basic text ain't enough, right? And so we continue to grow, and other fellowships don't have literature like we do. They don't have these simple basic instructions on how to change our lives. We should give NA a clap. We should give God, right, who saved my life, who brought me to this wonderful, magnificent, stupendous program called Narcotics Anonymous to give me a second chance. Right, I was having dinner earlier and somebody was talking about another chance at life, right? And we've all had, right, we get a chance to live two lives in one lifetime. Somebody said three, but it doesn't have to be three. You don't ever have to go back out. Relapse is a reality, but it's not mandatory. Right, so as I continue to work on myself and I continue to do the things that you guys have taught me, right? So I stay clean from drugs. I stay clean from the other substances, right, that I mentioned to you, right? And so, you know, life is happening. I get a chance, right, to go back to school. Right? I got a master's degree from one of the top universities in the country. Right? I'm able to work in the field as a licensed clinician. Right, I work in the school systems with special needs kids. I have my own business. I have a private practice that I staff therapists that work for me. I live in a home, 3,000 square foot home that has an in-ground pool, hot tub in the backyard, and something in the front called a koi pond. I don't even know what koi are, but I got them. I'm talking about the ability, right, to wish and dream. Narcotics Anonymous told me, whatever it is that you wish and dream, you could achieve. But you got to put in the work. You know, I went to a bunch of meetings this weekend. That's what I do when I come to events like this. I'm not about, you know, hanging out. You know, sometimes the meeting is inside the cabin. You know what I mean? Not sitting listening to a speaker, but in the cabin. I got a roommate. I don't know the guy. I don't know who the roommate is. But I got a sponsee that flew in from Fort Lauderdale. You guys clap for him. Right? You clapped earlier for him. He came in from Fort Lauderdale to hang out with me. Right? He flew 3 hours, got up at 4 o'clock in the morning, landed, waited for me. to pick him up at the airport, and then we drove 5 hours to get here. That's commitment. And we got up here, and it was God's country. Oh my God. So whatever it is that you think about, somebody said it earlier, you know, they tell you, you know, whatever you write down for your first year of recovery, you're going to sell yourself short. Sell yourself short. But I'm going to tell you something. Life doesn't really care. Life is going to do what life does. Life doesn't care how long I'm clean. Life doesn't care how many men I sponsor. Life doesn't care how many of these events I go to. And I've been to a lot. I've been doing this type of commitment. You got to be careful with the podium. I've been doing this since 1998. I used to be out of control. I was away from my family 20 weekends a year. In the name of NA. This could kill you. But I didn't understand ego and pride and arrogance and self-righteousness. I didn't understand those things in 98, in 99, in 2000. It wasn't until I got my heart broken in 2007 that I started looking at my life from a whole different perspective. And then tragedy happens. You ever been in recovery a long time and you have a tragedy? So I'm a member of a club that I don't really think anybody wants to be a member. There may be some members in this room, but I don't know. But I'm a member of a club that I don't really think anybody wants to be a member of. Right? On June the 9th, 2012, my 21-year-old son died from a heroin overdose. I had 17 and a half years clean. I got angry at God. I got angry at NA. You guys lied to me. You all told me that I was going to live happy, joyous, and free. And that was a lie. With 17 and a half years clean, my son should not have died. He had a year clean, and a week later, he was dead. Right? How does that happen? If I would have lost my parents, I would have been an orphan. If I'd have lost my wife, I would have been a widower. I lost my child. There's no name for it. Because it's not supposed to happen. And with 17 and a half years clean, again, I didn't want to use, but I wanted to kill myself. And this is not an arrogant statement, what I'm going to say, but I'll tell you that if I didn't use drugs in that moment, I ain't using drugs. There's nothing that I'm going to go through that's going to cause me to make that decision. Nothing. And I'll tell you, listen, I get out of bed every day, right? Because of what I'm about to say. I couldn't get out of bed. I couldn't get out of bed. I couldn't sleep. I couldn't eat. I was a good dad. I gave my son everything. He never saw me use. I gave him a chance. It wasn't like my life that my father left me when I was 5 and my mother kicked me out when I was 16. She said, you can't live here anymore and sell drugs. I couldn't understand that. What the hell is she talking about? And so in my process, right from, you know, going through, check this out, the breakup prepared my heart for the death of my son. The breakup prepared my heart for the death of my son. And that woman, who today is my wife, that relationship ended I told you, I mentioned that I got machismo inside of me. I think I mentioned that, right? So she was gone. No return. That effing B, you know. And I used to only speak to her when it was time to pick up my daughter. I'm on my way. Are you home? I'm dropping her off. 5 years. And on June the 9th, 2012, when my son died, she was the second person to show up at the hospital. I don't know how she knew. I don't know how she found out. But the gift of forgiveness took place at my son's deathbed. And her and I both knew that our daughter needed mommy and daddy back together. Because with mommy and daddy back together, all of the abandonment issues that I had been suffering from were going to be transposed onto her. And I don't know if you understand how deep-rooted abandonment is, but it's the cause of every failure in every relationship that I've ever had. If I got an inkling that you were leaving, I would end the relationship before you did. I don't know how many times God put a period, right? You ever experience expiration date? Period. But addicts, for some odd reason, we put a comma. God, wait a second. This is, you know. I at the men's wrap today, I heard some wonderful stuff. Pete, hug the woman in front of you. I don't even know who she is, but I think she's the one you were talking about. Because that's what love is about. That no matter what, no matter how far we go or don't go, our partner is the one that we're going to make sure stays close to our heart. Right? Because as I moved through the step process and I continued to work on myself, right? And I continued to build this relationship with this woman who I don't know if I hated her or not. I think I hated me. Because everything and anything that I do that makes me feel good or makes me feel bad doesn't come from outside of me. It's always inside of me. I could blame outside of me. I could blame the Oreo cookies. But that has nothing to do with when the doctor tested my blood and said, you have diabetes. That's all me. And so I had to make some changes in my life through this process called recovery. And the changes came as a direct result of working the steps. And so as I continue to stay in the relationship and stay in Narcotics Anonymous, you know, and I don't want to step on anybody's. If you're not doing step work, if the last time you did step work was in 2020, there's a problem with that. If you got 30 years clean and you haven't written on a step in 2023, there's a problem with that. It's August. It's August. Pick up the book. Call your sponsor. Tell somebody I'm lazy. Tell somebody I'm procrastinating. Tell somebody I'm being arrogant. Tell somebody. We can't let our newcomers, and we got a lot of them, come into the fellowship and think this is about, you know, a step a year. That's not going to work. And if you did step work 5 years ago, that's old information. Right? Because the re-evolution of who I am comes from a direct result of the pain and the experiences, right? It says here, check this out, and more will be revealed. It says, we grow through pain in recovery and often find that such a crisis is a gift, an opportunity to experience growth by living clean. It says, this gift may be finding strength within ourselves or regaining the feeling of self-respect that we had lost. If you're doing what I'm doing behind the scenes, eating Oreo cookies, and you're in the 300-pound range, there's a problem with that. You got to look at that. You got to be able to say, I'm going to do something different with my life. Because I don't know what is in store for you, just like I didn't know what was in store for me. But God had this plan. Right? He had this plan. A wonderful, magnificent plan. I was a willing participant, but I had no idea the miracle that was going to happen in my life. So, so I don't know if I mentioned this, but my wife is 17 years younger than me. We've been together on and off. There was a 5-year hiatus for 25, almost 26 years. So you do the math. Right? I just turned 61 in April. My wife is 44. We have this wonderful, beautiful, awesome 23-year-old daughter who just graduated college, right? And in 2 weeks, she starts her graduate program. Right? She's going to have a master's degree next year. And here's the miracle of that. I got a late start in the game. Right? I got my master's degree when I was 40 years old. I started my business when I was 46. And I'm about to go into my 15th year of business, and my daughter just graduated college with zero debt. She's graduating with her master's degree with zero debt. She doesn't know the magnitude of that yet, but when she's 35 and she's talking to her girlfriends and they're talking about student loans, she's gonna be like, what's that? Right? The miracle of recovery. The miracle of not letting money, property, and prestige divert me from my primary purpose. Right? That really put me in this trajectory of what is important. Right? So when I turned 55, my wife had this bright idea. And again, I was a willing participant. But she said, what do you think about having a kid? Hell yeah! I'm in! So at 55 years of age, we had a daughter. Her name is Selena. She's 5 years old. She starts kindergarten in September, actually in 2 weeks. So I got a kid going into her master's program and a kid going into kindergarten. Figure that out. And part of what's happening in my life, right, is that when I started thinking about, shit, how about if she's an athlete? That means I'm gonna have to run on the soccer field or on the softball field. I gotta watch this. So a couple years go by, and my wife, She had another bright idea. And she says, Ed, Selena can't grow up by herself. And I said, you're right. So I have a 2-year-old son. His name is Luke. She's the light of my life. I can't get enough of him. I can't. And not that, listen, not that he replaced my son, but he replaced the hole in my heart. Like, my son died on June the 9th, 2012. And my new son was born on June the 11th, 2021. So God went from 365 of this hole to 48 hours. That I went from sorrow to joy. So the last 2 years, I've been in this magnificent place of being daddy, of enjoying, right, what God has done in my life. Sometimes I feel like I'm ripping them off, because when my son is 20, I'll be 80. And I don't know how fair that is. But thank God that I'm a member of Narcotics Anonymous, and you guys taught me to not project, to stay in the moment, to live life in the happy, joyous, and free, right? To put myself in position where in the end, right, the end, this is the journey continues, right? This is probably my favorite piece of literature. The last chapter in the journey continues, right, is titled Love. I don't know if you've ever read it. Title Love. This book is also falling apart. But it says here, love is a form of intelligence. It's the intuition that brings us to the right words when there are no words. That tells us when to step forward and when to back away. We feel love when we speak truth. When we are in our higher power's will, we naturally carry a message, and the message we need finds us. We don't need to go looking for it. A lot of, you know, people who spoke this weekend were like, I'm so nervous. Just don't be nervous. Let God do his job. We're just the vehicle. Trust that what you have learned since you've been here is going to come out of your mouth. It says here, when we clear away the defects that block the passage, we can be a clearer channel for the love that surrounds us. We tap into a love that is greater than ourselves and find that we are able to do things we never thought possible. Brilliance comes through us. There's a saying in recovery that as we keep going, the road narrows. That's partly true. Our willingness to make the same old mistakes diminishes, and we know better than to act on our impulses much of the time. Not all of the time. Class of 95 knows what I'm talking about. Right? Much of the time. But that's not the end of the story. It's as if we pass through a funnel. The way gets tighter and more uncomfortable as we begin to adapt to this new way of life. And then without warning, it opens up and we are free. The road is no longer narrow. Sometimes it seems like there's no road at all. We move to our own rhythm, finding a pace and a direction that is right for us. This next sentence is where I wanted to get to. It says, the trip is inward and never stops. Right? Inward and never stops. It says we keep learning and growing and finding ways to live and use our experience to help others. No matter how long we've been clean, there is still more for us to learn and more for us to share. Right? So when you think about where you're at in your recovery, how much work you've done or not, what God has blessed you with, right? When you think about step 10, right? Step 10, it says this step is a great tool for avoiding grief before we bring it on ourselves. That should probably be in the first step. But it's in the 10th step. That means you've been here for a while. Right? You've been here for a while. And then once you get an understanding that I still got work without drugs, it takes you to the next level, right? That we started in 3 with this decision. In 7, right, where we enhanced the decision. Right, because in 7 it doesn't say God, it doesn't say power greater than myself, it doesn't say higher power, it says Him. We humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. And I've learned that in my personal recovery, in my personal belief system, my God lives in my heart. And so the word Him was appropriate because He's in me. Right, Him. And the minute, somebody said this at one of the workshops I was at. I think it was Chelsea. I don't know about you, but I used to hear audible voices when I was using. Like, don't do that. And I would do it anyway and I would get caught. And I was afraid to tell people because I didn't want them to think I was schizophrenic. Today with recovery, with all of the noise that has been shut down, right? With having the ability to know right from wrong, from living in God's consciousness, right? To be able to hear, don't do it. And say, okay, thank you, is an absolute blessing. Absolute blessing, right? So in 11, I got to a deeper level of surrender, right? In the first step in the basic text, right, it says that surrender means not having to fight anymore. Like, just put your hands down, right? But in It Works How and Why, right, and I'm going to shut it down in a couple minutes. It says here, check this out. It says, this is what surrender is. This is step 11, It Works How and Why, page 107. This is what surrender is. It's a heartfelt belief in our own fallibility as human beings and an equally heartfelt decision to rely on a power greater than our own. So surrender is a two-part experience. It's admitting and getting to a place of knowing that I'm fallible as a human being and a heartfelt belief that I gotta rely, not depend. There's a difference between those two words, dependence and reliance. I know God got my back. That's what reliance is. And so the more I surrender, and surrender doesn't come easy. I was no chump out there. Surrender meant handcuffs. I ain't giving it no. But here I don't like handcuffs either. And I don't have to be handcuffed by a metal thing. I could be handcuffed by a thought. Go eat those Oreo cookies. No! And I've been sharing about Oreo cookies for almost 20 years. This is not new. This is not new information. So struggling. And so in the process, right, I got to a place of what seeking is, right? It's past tense in the 11th step. It says through prayer Right? We sought through prayer and meditation. Sought, we're seeking something. So I've been praying for people. My process. I spend about an hour in prayer. I couldn't get 2 seconds in prayer. I spend an hour in prayer almost every day. I send out a meditation every day to about 300 people around the world, literally. The greatest gift that you can get is to give. And the more you give, I don't know how the mathematics works. You could talk to my man over here, Lance. He's the mathematician. But the more you give, the more you get. Just how it is. Just keep giving. I don't got it. Doesn't matter. Give it anyway. Just keep giving. And then it says here, and I'm going to end it. In tradition 3, it says, we look for ways to help instead of judge. Our task is to fan the flame of desire. It's the only place in our literature that says that. Our task is to fan the flame of desire, not dampen it. Stop judging fellow addicts. Stop judging your parents. Stop judging your children. Stop judging. It's a task. What does a task mean? I swear I'm going to shut it down. Task. These are out of Webster. I got this, but back in the day, my sponsor, I had to get a dictionary. Yeah. I mean, my sponsor said, look up the words. You don't really know what they mean. And it's true, I didn't know what they meant. We use words, I love you. Do you really? Do you really know what love is? You wouldn't be eating Oreo cookies if you loved yourself. Just saying. It says here, right, a task is a piece of work to be done or undertaken. Right, a piece of work to be done or undertaken. If I have a task in Narcotics Anonymous, as this book just told me, I have work to do. And it doesn't say do it and stop. The task is ever ending. Because I serve a loving God that's ever ending. Then the word desire, right? Desire says here that it's a strong feeling, not just a feeling. And most people that I've heard this weekend said I used over feelings. Right? It's a strong feeling of wanting to have something or wishing for something to happen. I got the desire to do a lot of things. And one of them isn't to hurt myself anymore. Today I want to serve the loving and caring God that I came to meet in Narcotics Anonymous. Today I want to be able to serve you as a fellow member of Narcotics Anonymous. Today I want to be able to serve me as a recovering addict, as somebody who means what he says and says what he means. I want to stand here with integrity. I want to have dignity. I want to have, I don't know if you know what, you know when you are born there's a date and when you die there's a date. And then there's a little dash in between those two dates. That little dash is my legacy. I want to be remembered by somebody who stood with integrity, who had self-respect, right? In the 12th step, and I swear I'll shut it down. I'm getting there. In the 12th step, it says, the lessons we learn in our recovery are sometimes bitter and painful. That line should also be in the first step. Or maybe even in who's an addict. Why does it wait till step 12 to tell me I'm going to learn lessons that are bitter and painful? But it says here, by helping others, we find the reward of self-respect as we are able to share these lessons with other members of Narcotics Anonymous. So I have a responsibility that when I get through something clean, both good and bad, I have a responsibility to come and report to the group. I have a responsibility to be present. You know, I've been very fortunate. Everybody has a task in Narcotics Anonymous. There are good coffee makers. There are good ride givers. There are good treasurers. There are good sponsors, right? I can't take the coffee commitment anymore. I got clean in a white neighborhood. You know, Maxwell House, Folgers. You know, I came with Butelo. I'll be back next week. So I remove myself from certain commitments, but you know, I've been sponsoring men for a long time, and you know, I sponsor men in the UK, in Canada, on the West Coast, in Florida, in New Jersey, and I do step work with them. Zoom has changed our lives. I thank God for that platform, because I never believed in doing step work over the phone. I used to fly to Florida or fly. I used to fly because I believed in face-to-face step work. Now I could do Zoom and not have to fly. Changed our lives, the way we look at recovery. And there's, I don't know how many of you here got clean on the screen. How many got clean on the screen? None, nobody got clean on the screen? After 2020, nobody? Oh, that's awesome. That's awesome. But people got clean on the screen and stick clean. And it's our responsibility to help them stay clean. Right? And so, I'm honored. This has been a fun experience for me. I didn't get bit. I thought I would get bit. I bought off. I don't like to use it. But I didn't get bit. You guys have fed me. Not only spiritually, but physically. I'm extremely grateful for everything that that's happened in my life. And if nobody has told you they love you, right? I love you. If you're sitting here and you were touched by anything that came out of my mouth, thank the God of your understanding. And if you're sitting here and you're confused about what came out of my mouth, that was my stuff and I apologize. Thanks.